Hello and welcome to another movie roast. What? Yep, that's right. See, here's the thing. Well, first off, as usual, I'm your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. And about, God, it's probably been close to at least a month now since we've done a movie roast. But I'm going to go ahead and say that that's Brian's fault because he wanted to do season two of Fargo, which, I needed some time to watch because I'm super lazy. So, now that we finished that, or I finished that, let's hope Brian remembers enough about it to do a podcast. He just pointed to his brain, so look at the big brain on Bri.
Wow.
Right? So, since I can't really find a good synopsis on the interwebs, and I'm sure for those of you who are fans, you know what it is about, but for those of you that don't, I'm going to let Brian ramble.
Okay, in season one, there was a character played by Keith Carradine named Lou Salverson. He was Allison Tolman's character, who name escapes me real quick. Let me look it up. In her name on the show in season one.
Molly
Salverson, yes. In season one, Keith Carradine as Lou Salverson, the senior. He owned a diner, and a few times during the season, he referred to the incident that caused him to leave the state police force. Well, season two, by all accounts, is the incident. It starts out where one of the Dodd family members, no, not one of the Dodd family, one of the Gerharts, played by the other, what's that kid from Home Alone?
What?
The kid from Home Alone. I'm botching this right now. What's that kid's name? Kieran Culkin. He played Rye Gerhart. He's kind of the family fuck-up, let's just say. The Gerhart family, they're a family of trucking company magnates, but they're also kind of gangsters. They've controlled various trucking lines for decades. It's dating back to the 40s or maybe even the 30s. So here we are set in 1978 during the gas crisis and the hostage crisis in Iran. And here we go into North Dakota, and Rye Gerhart's trying to move up the ladder in the family business. And Dodd Gerhart, who is played by... Dodd Gerhart is played by Jeffrey Donovan. He is... kind of with his sidekick, Hansi Dent, he's not really an adopted member of the Gerhart family, but he kind of is. They give Rye Gerhart a job to go collect some debts they're owed. Anyway, he ends up in a diner. And there's also a thing with a judge where Rye Gerhart kind of flips out on his judge in the middle of a diner, massacres her, massacres the cook in the diner, massacres the waitress, and the judge, before she dies herself, shoots Rye Gerhart, and then he stumbles outside bleeding. He sees a UFO, or thinks he does, and as he's staring at this light in the sky, he gets smashed by a car driven by Peggy Bloomquist, played by Kirsten Dunst, who brings the body home and sticks it in a garage. And she thinks she kills Rye Gerhart. Turns out she just really knocked him out. But then her and her husband kind of do away with Rye Gerhart for good in a pretty gruesome way, which leads to the Gerhart family trying to figure out what happened to their screw-up younger brother. And then, of course, being Fargo, it shifts into all these side storylines involving the Kansas City Mafia, which is, you know, controlled by this weird corporate interest. And this focuses on Patrick Wilson playing young Lou Salverson and Ted Danson, who's his father-in-law, trying to figure out what happened to the Gerhart boy, trying to figure out what's going on with this mob war. And yeah, there's just like bodies piling up and all this weird stuff keeps happening, and it just branches out into so many directions as it goes on. It all revolves around these three main elements, which is the Bloomquist couple, and this whole incident kind of exposes their fraud of a marriage. Lou Salverson's dealing with the case, plus dealing with the fact that his wife's dying of cancer. And how is he going to raise a five-year-old daughter by himself? Ted Danson's character is pretty much on the verge of retirement from the force. And, yeah, it's pretty much hell comes to Frogtown.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say Ted Danson was awesome.
I'm going to go ahead and say there was no such thing as a non-awesome character in this season.
Okay.
But yeah, it's like I said, it starts with Ry Gerhardt's murder, and it just blossoms into just pure mayhem all over the place.
Okay, so back to the the standard formatting for this show. Talk about what we liked about it. Did you want to? I'll take the lead on this. I'll take the lead. So, season one of Fargo. It kind of blew me away. It was not what I expected at all, and it was really, really well done. And I have to say, season two did not disappoint. And like Brian mentioned earlier, with every story leads to another story, leads to another story. They all tie together. They have all this stuff intertwined, and they do it really well. And that is one of the things that I like the most about the show, outside of. Well, the character's name, Mike Milligan, played by Bokeem Woodbine. Oh, my God. This guy is amazing. Like Brian said, there's really not a bad character on the show. They all pretty much nailed it. But Bokeem Woodbine was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, Bokeem Woodbine as Mike Milligan and the Kitchen Brothers, a prog rock band from Kansas City. Or you might say a... very literary minded gangster and his two murderous friends.
Yes, who are mutes.
Yeah, they don't say much, which is to say
they speak with their shotguns.
Yeah, they speak with their bullets and their eyeballs, and they're pretty much the best. They dress like disco pimps, and they pretty much just kill anybody that gets in their face, which rules.
I didn't mean to sip my coffee in the mic there. My bad. But yeah, and that was actually one of the worst parts, to be honest with you. Mike Milligan had some really amazing speeches, monologues, whatever, in this series, throughout the season. And when I was trying to show them to people who don't watch the show, they're really not easy to come by on, like, YouTube. So I never actually got to... show anybody, so you're not going to be able to Google this and find awesome stuff, but trust me, it's definitely worth watching the season just for that.
The montage where he does the whole Jabberwocky thing from Lewis Carroll is amazing. It's probably one of my favorite things ever filmed. Yeah, and it's just, again, going all the way back to the beginning, aside from the whole Ry Gerhardt thing, there's also hinted at pretty early on there is a war coming. The Kansas City Mafia wants to get into trucking going from Kansas City to Canada, which means they have to go through Minnesota, North Dakota, etc. And a lot of those lines are controlled by the Gerhardts. Well, they go up there with intent to talk to the father, Gerhardt, played by... where is he? Michael Hogan. He plays Otto Gerhardt, who has a stroke right off the bat, within the first 5 minutes, which starts the whole family rustling
power grab.
Yeah, because Dodd thinks he's clearly the guy that should be running everything. But the mother, played by Jean Smart, who I loved ever since grade school because I used to be obsessed with Designing Women. There's probably a psychological thing going on in the background there, but we'll get to that another time. She plays Ma Gerhardt, and she looks every bit of the grandmotherly type that will bake bread and rustle up the grandkids for a nice big breakfast, but she is one diabolical human being. She is no less bloodthirsty and vengeful than anyone else in the Gerhardt family. Granted, she doesn't necessarily do any of the stabby herself, but she definitely will point at somebody and go, hey, go stab him. And you're like, whoa, grandma's got out. Grandma's got some bloodlust. I'm into it.
Yeah, and, you know, on top of all that, I also want to mention a few of the other standouts that, you know, they're not exactly, you know, main characters, but they're peppered in and are amazing, would be Nick Offerman. He is in there, and he plays a guy named Carl Weathers. He's basically the town's drunken lawyer, which is pretty hilarious at times. And then, of course, Ronald Reagan is in the show, played by none other than...
Oh, my God. That's maybe my favorite Bruce Campbell moment ever.
Yes.
By when he's in the bathroom, and he's pretty much just speaking off the cuff while he's taking a leak. Oh, my God.
I just love when he gets off the bus and Nick Offerman's character is talking mad shit. He's like, I ain't shaking his fucking hand, blah, blah, blah. Second he walks up, he's like, hey, sir, how you doing? You know, I was like, yes.
My favorite moment was in the bingo hall where Nick Offerman was doing a whole, you know, the girl in the polka dot dress, the moon landing, it's all a conspiracy. They know what's going on. I'm like, this guy's the best. That was my, I'll get to that later, but that was kind of my, like, I want more of this guy because he's unhinged and I love it.
It was pretty funny. I agree.
He's like Alex Jones way before Alex Jones thought about being Alex Jones.
Although.
Except with cooler clothes.
Here's, you're probably not going to like this one, but, I honestly thought, because I know that, like, the whole time, but as I was started watching, before I watched, you kept rambling on and on about this Dodd Gerhardt. Dodd, he's so creepy. He's like, fuck, blah, blah, blah. He's such a badass. Yeah, I think Bear was way worse.
Well, here's the thing with Dodd. At the point that I started rewatching this, I'd only seen the first three episodes on TV. And when he does a certain thing to a certain typewriter salesman, I was like, this guy is just deadly, and I don't like him. He makes me nervous. But as the show goes on, you start to see that Dodd Gerhardt's really not, which is kind of what made him awesome, because they could have made him Frank Castle, and instead they kind of turned him into
Frank Williams,
the town wuss. And he still talks a lot of shit,
but he doesn't get shit done.
Yeah,
so
he's
much.
Yeah, he's
his hired hand, or oh. I should say his, I don't want to say stepbrother, but basically, like he mentioned earlier, that guy Hanzi who hangs around, he's, you know, a Native American who just happened upon their farm or whatever when he was a kid, and Otto, the father, took him in, and they raised this kid, but they never treated him as an equal, and he was always like Dodd's, like, hitman, more or less.
His whipping boy,
yeah.
Almost.
So, yeah, he would talk shit to the Indian and then tell him to go, hey, go kill this guy. Go take care of this. Go find out. And, you know, he did, but he got fed up after a while, which was awesome. But, yeah, I always thought, like, the whole time, I'm like, yeah, I mean, the guy talks a lot of shit, but Bear kind of is more of a badass. Like, he choked out, you know, employees, family members, nieces. You know what I'm saying?
Like, that was one of the, like, coldest things ever was when the niece gets dealt with.
Yes.
For her betrayals, which is another, that's what I'm saying, like, everything connects to various different other things. Nothing flows in a very streamlined, let's make this simple for everybody so we don't confuse anyone. This show is weaving in all different directions at all times, and anything can take a turn and just totally flip the entire narrative in the split second, which is, you know, it rewards the patient. It rewards somebody who's a smart viewer. And, yeah, like I said, this girl, she's a member of the Gerhardt family, but she's got some thing going on with a certain Mr. Milligan. It involves stuff and other butt stuff.
How?
Well, let's be honest. There's some butt stuff.
So, moving right along, is there anything else you want to mention that you liked so much, or should we move on to what you didn't like?
I love Hanzi Dent. I think he is the best bad guy in a while.
I loved when he walked into that bar towards the end, probably about episode 7 or 8. He walked into that bar, and they're like, we don't serve your kind here, or whatever, and he fucking talked a little shit, drank his drink, Jesus Christ, and then just, like, murdered everybody. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah, he just, like, Hanzi Dent is like this just force of nature walking through the world, and if you happen to be in his path of destruction, then there is no time to look out. He's probably already killed you, which is why he's the best or the scariest.
Yeah.
And that it capped off at the end when he was sitting at the park and those kids were picking on the mentally challenged kid. And then Hanzi gets up. You're like, oh, those kids are dead now. He's not even going to send them home with a black eye. He's sending them kids home in a body bag. This is going to be awesome. They don't show it, but you know.
It's implied.
You know it's coming because Hanzi Dent don't fuck around.
Yeah.
He'll fuck up your life, but he's not going to like. He's not gonna lecture a group of teenagers. He's pretty much gonna bury them right under the pitcher's mound where they belong, presumably. Not advocating violence necessarily, but in this sense, I am. Bruce Camp, Brad Garrett. Oh my God! Even though he had a short little arc as Joe Bulo, the spokesman for the Kansas City Mafia, he's pretty great. The end of the first episode where they're showing the slideshow of this is what the Gerhardt's family looks like. This is the breakdown of their business structure. And this is how we inject ourselves and kind of take it over. And you just see that guy behind the spotlight. And all you see are the glasses and his like Cheshire Cat smile like, let's do it. And I'm like, I don't know who that is, but I love that shot. That is such a great shot because it's so – it's like almost plucked right out of a really good comic book. And I know that's not what some people want to hear, but it was such an interesting shot because it really played up the whole devious mastermind behind the curtains. Like, oh, I'm not really going to get my hands dirty. I'll send the Milligan guy and the Kitchen Brothers out to do all the stabbing and shooting, but you know, I'm going to definitely benefit from it. I like that. It just created the air of this season kind of exists just above the realm of reality. And then when you factor in like the UFO and all the, you know, wacky conspiracy stuff that Nick Offerman would bandy on about it from time to time, it elevated this series just above being grounded but without making it like a wacky Lost in Space episode.
We'll move it on to what we didn't like. So
you're gonna have to take this one.
Oh, I'm gonna take it. You're probably not gonna like it, but I'm gonna take it. First off, I get it. Ooh. In the beginning, right? I get it in the beginning when, you know, they had like the burnout Gerhardt seeing a UFO in the sky and blah blah blah. I get it, but when they brought it back and made it like an actual thing, like it wasn't just maybe his burnout fucking brain. That was just that. Kind of ruined some stuff for me. Like that was annoying.
It didn't bother me because I didn't take it literally. I took it to mean kind of like a visual cue that this is the kind of story where if you weren't there, you'd never believe it happened. It wasn't necessarily there was a real live UFO. It was more like if some dude just came up to you on the street and you met him and you introduced yourself and you started having a conversation. He's like, oh, by the way, 3 years ago, I was in this massive motel shootout in South Dakota. Everyone's going to be like, nah, no, you weren't. Like, he could tell.
See,
a million.
That makes more sense than a UFO coming down.
But that's what I'm saying. I feel like the UFO was a visual reminder that only the people that are here that survive are going to believe this actually happened. If you go anywhere else in the world and tell this story, they'll be like, you're a butcher. But yet you were involved in a shootout with a bunch of mafia guys from Kansas City and a bunch of crazy hillbillies from North Dakota. Bullshit. I don't believe it.
Meh.
I feel like it's a kind of story like, you know, it's because they kept kind of playing up the whole angle with Peggy Gerhardt that she was a little woo-hoo.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And I mean, you could just when they finally arrested her and they're driving her away and she's talking like she almost had this sense like, no, I'm supposed to be the best me there is. Like, she was so wrapped up in this, you know, becoming a better person with these seminars and these workshops. Like, she just didn't have a firm grasp on what's real and what's not anymore. And I felt like that was just like a heightened way of letting everybody know, like, yeah, nobody buys your story, lady. Not necessarily to put the focus on her, but like the few people that live through that. They're like, you're a small-town cop. You arrest drunk drivers, and you're sitting in a diner all day drinking coffee and eating bear claws. Nobody, you didn't see anything. I'm just saying, like, just in general, how often to somebody you know that doesn't always seem on the level, tells you some story, you're like, you weren't there. Get the... You're just trying to sound like you're into some things, and you're really not.
I don't think it was meant to be that way.
That's how I took it. I'm not saying that's necessarily what the director or writer was trying to do. I'm just saying that's how I took it. I mean, I watched that going, this doesn't bother me, but I know other people were like, oh, and were taken right out of it when that happened.
Doing it once, I can maybe see, but repeating it multiple times, just ugh, as Mike would say.
Well, again, from what I read, and this could be not entirely true, but I read that there were accounts of, you know, locals in small towns in that region during the gas crisis that claim to this day they saw UFOs.
It doesn't mean it was true.
That's the point. You know, the town wacko can go to the local diner and be like, they're here, they're right behind the tree. And most of the people are like, nah, it didn't happen. I think it was just kind of like a,
'cause it didn't.
Like an over-exaggerated, like, visual reminder, like, you know, just because you think you saw it doesn't mean it actually happened.
Eh. You're not going to convince me to
I'm not trying to convince you necessarily. I'm just trying to tell you that's how I took it. I took it as, you know, people always tell, like, their own tall tales, and most people are like, you always get the one guy that goes, maybe they did live through, maybe they did see Bigfoot. No, you didn't see Bigfoot. Shut up, boo. Go away.
Boo?
That's right, boo.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I guess on to number two.
Oh, you have multiple things.
I do. The cinematography I did not care for either. You know, in the first one, they did a little, you know, things here and there with, you know, wipes and split screens, and I feel like that was extremely overdone in some of the episodes, especially towards the beginning of season two. Like, I feel like half of the first episode was in split screen. I feel like they were trying to be too artsy with the cinematography in a lot of the scenes in the first, like, half of the season. It slowed down towards the end, but the first couple of episodes were like, dude, you need to stop.
I don't remember that, and it didn't bother me, so I don't really remember it well enough to go, yeah, you're right, that was...
No, I didn't expect you to remember.
I mean, I definitely think there was some of that, for sure. Again, I mean, looking back on it now, maybe it was their whole way of saying, hey, this is set in the 70s, why not do what they did in the late 70s with all these crappy shows like Trapper John M.D. and do, you know, this guy's filling a syringe, and this guy's putting a blanket over someone's face, or whatever, I don't know, however those medical shows worked back then. I will go ahead and just say, back to things I like, the soundtrack was amazing.
Sure. I don't recall it.
All that weird 70s music. I'm into it.
All right, so I guess I'll be done with hating.
Oh.
Would you expect me to have more?
I don't know, you sound like you had like a laundry list for a minute.
I don't know, I thought it was pretty decent.
All right, whatever. What? Anyway... what I didn't like, do I have to have something?
Yeah, it's your rules.
Golly. All right, I didn't love Jesse Plemons, is that his name? As Ed the butcher? He wasn't great, because I really like this cast probably as much as I liked the first season. I think Ted Danson was great as the father. Patrick Wilson, the guy who played Night Owl in Watchmen as Lou Salverson, was great. His tempered comments in the face of danger were great. Like, I remember he had like three guns pointed at him and somebody made a comment and he goes, we're nice people up here. I was just like, that's so weird and awesome. I love it. He never seemed to get rattled, upset, angry, happy. He always just kind of was like, mm-hmm. Yep, that sounds about right. Like, he just had this weird monotone, like, golly shucks attitude, which I loved. Nick Offerman. Okay, there's another one. Not enough Nick Offerman. He just kind of faded into obscurity. Like, he was there. I think there was a point where he went to the washroom, and then you never saw him again. He didn't get killed, did he? I don't think he got killed.
No, he did not.
Yeah, so what the hell? Where did he go? More Reagan! Oh my God, Bruce Campbell as Reagan was the best. They should have found a way to figure him into all this. Maybe he stayed at a hotel right across the street from the shootout. Hey, what's going on out there? Shoot him up for the Gipper.
Wow.
Maybe they vote Democrat, stupid Jimmy Carter. What? No, that was like my favorite Bruce Campbell role ever. And it was like one and done. He didn't even necessarily look like Reagan. He looked like a weird Reagan mannequin, but it was still awesome. I don't know. Other than that, like, I don't have any. Like you said, Mike Milligan.
Hey, this is stuff we hate. Quit bringing up stuff you liked.
Yeah, dude, there wasn't a lot of. I mean, my only complaints really are just Jesse Plemons. I mean, he fit the role, but I don't know. Something about his face.
It was weird for me because in Breaking Bad, he was like the ripped youngster, and in this show, he was like the fat piece of shit. Like, I feel like I could have played that role. You know what I'm saying?
You just wanted to make out with Kirsten Dunst.
I would, especially with those fucking 70s mom slacks.
Yeah, she definitely was rocking those things with the bell bottoms and the rainbow colored gym shoes or whatever she had in her brown, boots. I got some boots. Gonna be my best self.
That's no.
I just had a Sebastian Maniscalco moment.
Although I did like when she stabbed that guy. I'm not going to name names just in case, but whatever.
She was pretty good.
She was a great nutbag.
She wasn't even like a nutbag. She was just such a weirdo. Like, it feels like everybody.
She stabbed somebody for having an attitude. You know what I'm saying? Like,
all right, yeah.
You're not going to eat your dinner? Stab. Like, all right. That's a little bag of nuts right there.
True. I think what made her nuts, though, was not that she was, like, angry psychotic, but she was, like, almost
Stepford Wives.
Yeah. Just, yeah, eat your peas or I'll stick this knife in you. What? Yeah, my only complaint was, like I said, Brad Garrett, I didn't expect to like him as much as I did. Like, I never was like, oh, Brad Garrett's the worst or Brad Garrett's the best. I was like, Brad Garrett, he exists.
The funny thing about Brad Garrett in this movie is he had the look and feel that he had in Suicide Kings, but he was like important in this show. Where in that movie, he was, you know, just kind of like
Jimmy Two Shoes.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I always liked Brad Garrett. He's
all right. I mean, I never was like Brad Garrett should be in everything.
Well, no.
Or if I was going to do the Bruce Campbell's Reagan thing, Brad Garrett should be in everything. He's a great American. Enough. Let's have hot dogs.
All right, so I guess we'll move it into what we would do differently. Obviously, it's not a big secret. The UFO would have been gone.
Less star wipes.
No. I mean, some of the cinematography, I would have been like, hey, you know what? Fucking ease it down there, George Lucas. But I would have had way more Mike Milligan.
Yeah, Mike Milligan, they should just like do
maybe a little more Hansi.
Hansi Dent.
You have Hansi in like some kind of awesome battle with Mike Milligan and the Kitchen Brothers. I mean, you know, they kind of did that a little bit in the woods.
I was wondering what happened to the Dining Room Brothers.
Well, that's what they used to be.
Oh, okay.
They got upgraded. They got promoted to the kitchen.
Nice.
Next, they get to be Mike Milligan and the... damn it. What's the guy up front?
The Pantry Brothers?
Not the hostess, but the...
The Maitre D'?
Yes, and the Maitre D' brothers. Thanks for picking up my jokes there. Nailed it.
Swish. What I've done differently, I think I would have kept, maybe not. I would have kept Dodd maybe more, a little more diabolical. Like, I actually felt myself go, aw, when they were coming back from the meeting with the Kansas City people. And they were in the back of the car, and he, like, got all whimpery and leaned his head on Gene Smart's shoulder. And I was like, oh, no, no. Because I had this picture in my head of this guy is, like, the new, awesome, totally messed up, tough guy. And then he, like, goes all like, Mommy, will you hold me? I'm like, don't do it. No, my God.
He almost kind of, and let me finish before you go anywhere with my comments, but he almost reminded me, he's like the Sonny of the family. You know, just saying shit when he should. Like, you're telling me the Italians guarantee our protection?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, and he's like, you don't fucking speak outside of the family. I kind of feel like that's Dodd. Like, he just does whatever the fuck he wants. And you're like, you're a fucking moron. And he's like, you know, meh.
What was that scene in The Godfather where that guy comes in and he's like, hey, you want something to eat? He's like, go ahead and go home, sweat it out. And then he closes the door. He's like, I don't want to fucking see him ever again. You bury him where you leave him. Like that guy, what's his name? Luca Brasi, not Luca Brasi. Clemenza's driver.
Yeah, I don't remember his fucking
leave
name.
Leave the gun.
Where was he? Oh, he called in sick that day. What do you mean he called in sick? I need to watch that now.
I feel like it's been a year since I watched The Godfather.
Wait, so you're telling me the Italian's guarantee? Hey, never tell anybody outside the family what you're thinking again.
My favorite, now we're on The Godfather, but I'm going to say this. I got to get this out. The part where he finds, what is the idiot's name? When he finds Carlo down on the block, like hanging out, and he kicks the shit out of him, but then he throws that right hook and misses by a mile.
And they still played it off?
Yeah, they tried to be like, nah, that never happened. He throws this massive right hook at Carlo's face and whiffs so bad. It's not even like, oh, maybe he grazed his nose. No, he missed his face by like 6 inches. And he just kept on kicking and punching anyway.
Yeah, that was, there's so many good things about that movie. Maybe we should do that, a special. If you guys want to hear us do a Godfather movie roast, let us know. Because I feel like you guys want to hear that stuff.
I will do the Godfather.
I'm talking to them.
Oh, well, whatever.
Out there in radio land. Right. Where the fuck are we in this podcast right now?
We were talking about Dodd putting his head on.
No, I mean, like, segment-wise. What are we talking about?
We were talking about what we would do differently.
Right. So you're paying attention. I like it.
I just think that Dodd is disappointingly, like...
He had his moments, but yeah, he wasn't the badass that I was expecting after your initial, like, dude, he's the fucking best.
When he put that guy in the typewriter, when he did that thing to the typewriter guy, and I don't want to say it because, man, it is just shocking. Maybe I just didn't expect it, but it was just so dastardly and cold-blooded that I was like, wow, man, human beings really are capable of horrible things. Cold-blooded. I was just saying, like, people are all, like, that's what I'm saying. When I listen to religious people, like, oh, the devil's coming. Like, oh, dude, you see Dodd Gerhardt? That guy's way worse. Now I'm like, whew, I'm off the reservation. No.
Pretty much.
That's like a character decision that, like, doesn't necessarily ruin the show. Didn't ruin it for me. It's just, like, I had a path in my head designed for him. And when he deviated from it, I was just feeling a little disappointment. Because I wanted him to be a certain... And I guess it actually makes the show better that he wasn't anything like I expected. And that Hansi rose from the ashes to be the true psycho of the series.
Right.
Hansi Dent's the best. They should do a show about him traveling America, hitchhiking with people.
I was going to say they should do a show about Milligan, but...
Like, do, like, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, but Hansi Dent's Big Adventure?
That'd be weird.
He gets in a truck with Large Marge, and they go around scaring and murdering everybody for no reason.
See, now, you shouldn't have said that, because now I kind of want to watch that new Pee-wee again.
I still haven't even seen it.
I mean, I don't want to sound like a dork, but it was hilarious.
I believe it.
Unlike previous movie roast where we normally, you know, come up with some kind of a witty three questions. We didn't really have time to do that. We only had like 2 months here, so like we didn't have time to come up with three simple questions. So
right, but everybody's super pumped now that the movie roast is back.
I know, right? They're not even listening. They're just too busy cheering still. Yeah, some people are crying.
It's been all comic roast and you may or may not like it for like 2 months now.
Yeah. Hey, we interviewed Keith Powell. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, Keith Powell though is not in Fargo, but he might be in season 3. Check your local listings.
Well, he's going to be in season 2 if Keith broke his leg. I mean, only because he's right in the show, but...
And maybe they'll talk about Fargo.
Yeah, maybe.
And they'll have Hansi Dent do a walk-on.
It's quite possible. No. So, I think we're just going to number it and get out of your hair for this lovely day. So, I'm going to let Brian go first because he's probably not going to like mine.
You're right. I probably hate it. I'm going to go ahead and defer to what I wrote in my... short review on the website, and I'm going to stick with a 9.5. It's the show's still amazing. It's still handily my favorite current show next to Daredevil, but I still feel like the first season was just a smidge better.
Oh, I agree. The first season absolutely was better, but I'm only at about an 8.5.
I was waiting for you to be like, oh, 7. Give it a 7. And I'd be like, I will give you a sword across the table here, because that's not even a real score for that show.
No, I mean, at certain points, it was just like, ugh. But you can't deny some of the amazingness that was in this season, you know. But, yeah. So there you have it. If you like what you hear, go watch the show. No, I mean, I'm assuming that your written review is probably a little more in-depth than what we
it's
just
actually
did.
Not.
So, yeah, never mind. No reason to go and read Brian's review. But what you can do, if you did watch the show, is you can go to reviewandroast.com and you can rate it yourself. Or you can even write your own review. All you got to do is click that little thing that says write a review, and boom. You log in, you write a review.
And we'll say thanks for working for free.
Yes, exactly. Hey, they're going to do it on IMDb anyway. Why not do it on R&R? Just sure. Saying. So, there you have it.
Rough
There's
and ready.
Our ill. Gross. So, that was our triumphant return as the movie roast. And we hope you enjoyed it as much as Brian enjoyed it, because I thought it was dumb. See you next week.